Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
That's awesome. Awesome.
That's awesome.
Awesome. Awesome.
Oh, dude, that's awesome.
That's
awesome.
Really awesome.
Awesome.
That's so awesome.
Awesome. Oh, awesome.
That's awesome.
With Stephen Bradford.
Well, hello, Steve Burton. Actor from award-winning TV show General Hospital.
Yeah?
I mean, what a weekend, dude.
I know. It was a crazy weekend. The Emmys are fun.
I've heard.
Now for me. Now they're fun.
Now they're fun. Well, sometimes when you don't have any skin in the game, it's more fun, right?
Yeah, it's just you know, I guess.
Any personal skin in the game.
Yeah, the important thing for the people who are nominated, like the new kids or the new people who've never been nominated,
right,
is just it's really hard to tell people to enjoy it.
It is.
You know, because you're so like, oh, am I going to win? Am I not? Do I have the tape? Do I not have the tape? Do I make a speech? Do I not make a speech? Do I have a chance? Like you go through this whole thing of just tearing yourself apart and not really getting to enjoy the interviews, the fun, all that stuff. So going as a presenter, which was, you know, I haven't presented for.
Dude, presenting's the best.
Like 20 years.
Yeah.
And it was great to present with Ingo.
Yeah.
You guys
had a tan off. It was great. I was like, who's most tan up there? I don't know.
That was some good looking.
The daytime award for most tan person.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was amazing because, you know, they don't make you, but they ask you to come to rehearsal the day before.
Right.
Right. So you can just kind of block, you know, get
so
your.
You know what you're doing.
So you know what you're doing.
So you don't make an idiot of yourself when you're walking out.
So Ingo didn't show up.
Awesome.
So he's like, dude, I'm not going to make it. That's not my Australian accent.
No. Nope.
Nor will it come out.
Nope.
I'm not going to make it. I said, no problem, dude. I'll get our blocking for both of us and figure out what we're doing. I said, what are you doing? He's testing to be like an LA County lifeguard.
In his free time?
In his free time. Like literally. Like he was
sworn. So does he want to have the skills?
He already has the skills.
So but he
He's
wants,
a waterman for sure.
No, I know that, but does he actually want to like
Yeah, he wants to
spend
do
spend his Saturday mornings?
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he wants to be a lifeguard.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. Because it's no joke.
Well, no, I know that.
I mean, but I don't think people really know.
Is this for a reality show?
This is not for a reality show.
This is for real. Okay, so he's back on our show. Chances are he'll be here a lot of days.
Yes.
He has kids.
Correct.
So.
And a business.
Yeah. Like, I can't wait to have him on the podcast.
Yeah, it's going
to
be great.
To hear
but
about.
But I was impressed because.
Of course.
You know, he's obviously, you know, can swim and he paddleboards and surfs and does it. You know, he grew up in the water.
Well,
I bet the
fitness test for something.
He'll tell us everything, but it's like a.
How many year old lifeguards are there?
There aren't many year olds. If there are, they're running the lifeguard station.
That's right. They're not new recruits.
They're not new recruits. He's in with all the rookies.
That's what I mean. This seems like a reality show.
He was in with all the kids.
Well, dude, Nathan Fillion has a show called The Rookie, where he's a rookie in the LA police force. What a great idea for a TV show.
Yeah, so this should have been, they should have been taping this.
And they call it The Minnow.
Get it? The Minnow, yes. So stupid. So he's in there with all these kids doing these physical tests.
Yeah.
You know, like all this stuff. He's like, I did okay. I was middle of the road for some of the, but he goes, as soon as I get in the water, it's over.
I'm a friggin' fish.
Yeah, it's over. So that's cool. He missed it, but he was being sworn in and had to do his physical test. It's like a 16-day test or something crazy. But anyway. We'll get him on the show. But the Emmys were fun. My wife was able to go because we live here now.
I was going to say, when's the last Emmy that she
went
to?
Oh, I don't even know. We tried to figure it out. I can't even remember. I would literally have to Google it. But Google it.
Hey, what happened in our life? I don't know.
Google it.
That's so ridiculous.
I know. Isn't it amazing?
That's ridiculous.
I'll just Google it right now. So it was fun.
Right.
We got to the hotel early to get ready there. And then we literally walked 25 feet to the Civic Auditorium, which is great.
That's awesome.
It was so fun, man.
To not have the congestion of the it was cool having it over at the Beverly Hills Hotel, or not the Beverly Hills Hotel, the Beverly Hilton.
Yes.
Yeah, it was always cool over there because that was the Golden Globes room, and just, there was some history there. But that auditorium is beautiful. And that part of Pasadena is so cool.
Dude, Pasadena, first of all, is cool.
Totally.
Right? Old Town Pasadena. Because we were driving through. I go, man, this is like mature trees. Really nice.
Yeah.
And the auditorium, because I was talking to the stage manager, Steve, there. And Steve, and I go, he goes, how's it going? I said, dude, it's so cool that you guys are doing this in a theater again.
Yeah.
Because it does feel like, even though it's not on TV, it feels like the Emmys.
Yeah.
We're all there in the theater. Everyone's dressed up. You got the orchestra. The set looked amazing.
Yeah.
Look, there was a dry spell where it was kind of sketchy.
Yeah.
Where they were in Vegas and
the
parking lot at Walmart. And,
right. Yeah.
You know, so, but they're doing such a great job.
Do we know? How many people need to watch in order for them to be
I didn't even see it on Facebook Live or Facebook Watch. There's so many different streaming. You can't even keep track.
Well, that's the thing is because I tuned in on Twitter.
Yeah.
And it shows you how many people are watching. There's only 2,500 people watching on Twitter.
Right. So there's a bunch of other avenues.
That's what I was like. If it's only on Twitter, because that's not a lot of people to
Facebook, watch. Facebook Watch.
So there's a
Connect,
bunch of
TV or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, okay. So there's a bunch of different ways. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I mean, there's got to be someone that has the number somewhere.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. So it was fun, man. You see everybody. You know, it's like a high school reunion.
Oh yeah.
You see your friends. You see people nominated, and it was so amazing. And
is it cool when you're not at the when you don't have to worry about we're going to commercial. Oh, we're coming back from commercial. Is it? It's a little more seamless, a little more.
Yeah, I found it this year. I heard a few complaints that it was too long, and it didn't seem too long to me. I thought it moved. I thought they did a good job of moving it. Well, nobody had, you know, crazy long speeches.
Well, when you don't have to wait for a 60-second commercial, then it's got to be shorter,
they
right?
They take little breaks. They do take little breaks, like commercial breaks.
Okay,
but it didn't seem like they took as many as they did when Dick Clark did it.
Sure, yeah.
But. You know, it was great. Judge Judy was awesome.
Yeah, that was
she got
cool.
the lifetime achievement. She's so amazing.
And seeing Trebek there, going, knowing
Trebek,
he's going through,
and
that,
it was just
amazing,
really cool, man. I thought it was well done. They did a great job. And then to top it off, a lot of actors on our show won the awards.
God, that is so cool. Like, to go through all those categories when you got Patricia for guest and Vernet for supporting. And then going, like, when you get something to cheer for, at every step of the way.
Yeah, it's cool.
You don't have a dry spell, you know what I mean?
No,
like, that's cool.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you get up into, you know, you get up into the lead categories, and you get –
And then Max Gale won.
Yeah.
Look, I'm so excited about everybody who won. Let's just put that out there,
right?
We all want our peeps to win.
Well, that's right, because you had Haley
– And, you know, you had multiple people in each category.
That's true, too,
except for lead. Maurice was the only guy from GH. In lead.
Right.
No, John Lindstrom was.
Oh, John Lindstrom, yeah.
Yeah, so you had all those.
Right.
But it was so great because I felt, you know, being on the show for so long and going through so many stories, I felt the, I guess, how important the Alzheimer story is.
Yeah.
And was and
yeah.
still is on the show for awareness and, you know, when we're on the road, people come up to us and say stuff about it.
It's resonating with
you know,
people,
it's resonating,
so cool.
Which is amazing. And you couldn't have had two better Mark Teschner casting Max Gale to play Mike is amazing. And, you know, him and Maurice's chemistry is amazing.
Yeah.
And it was just such a great story that I was hoping that I was just hoping both of them would win because of the storyline, because of the work that I saw them do.
Well, and
in the
scenes
I was with them, I'm like, dude, this is like real. Like this is not even acting. These guys are just, it's incredible. And of course they ended up winning, which was, you know, so crazy.
The thing is like the way you submit for the Emmys, you're submitting episodes, right?
Yes.
So you're not submitting a year's worth of work. But the cool thing about both Maurice and Max winning is that it was a nice way to celebrate that whole year of work, you know, like, cause you know, you can have, I forget, it was two episodes that people submitted this year or whatever it was. I don't know.
Yeah. It's
but
a
like,
different
you can
every
have,
year.
You can have a couple great episodes out of nowhere and win an Emmy and someone that has put their blood, sweat and tears into a storyline. Like they, you know, like it can go either way. Right.
Sure.
So it was really cool that even though the people that were voting were watching those two episodes or whatever.
Right.
In a way, you can kind of celebrate that whole storyline, which is
And look, I don't know, you know, the Emmys, there's always criticism on voting.
Oh, sure. I mean, you can.
So,
it's a subjective thing.
Totally.
There's no right answer, right?
Yeah. Like, I mean, and I'm usually pretty objective,
right?
You know, because you want to be right. You want to be.
Sure.
You want the best work to be.
Right.
Up there. You want the best people.
Right. But your idea of what's best work is not necessarily what someone else's idea. And that's the tough part.
Correct. You know, because I feel that, you know, GH should have won writing or best show because of that story.
Sure.
Because of that.
Did they submit that?
I don't know.
That's the thing.
That's the thing, too.
You know, and when it comes to best show, sometimes they submit an episode that's really technical heavy.
Yeah.
Or like if it's a lot of cast involved or an explosion because they're trying to show production value.
Correct. Yeah. And that's always the big gamble, too.
Yeah.
Is because you don't know what show to submit. You might have a great, great, you know, a nurse's ball episode.
Yeah.
Right. Where the hair looks great. Everything. Oh, wow. It looks amazing. The show looks amazing. The lighting.
Yeah.
Performances are good. Great. Let's do that one. Or you have a show that's maybe just, you know, Mike and
Sonny talking.
But
it's great.
But it's amazing.
Yeah.
But then people are like, well, that's just two people sitting down talking.
Right. That's not hard to shoot.
That's not hard to do or act.
You might get a writing award, but you're not going to get best show.
Right.
Yeah. So some people might know how it works. Some people might not. But you might be like, oh, wow, I watched Days all year. And man, they had an amazing year. God, it was just a really great show this year. And then you don't know what episodes they submitted, though, right?
Correct.
So,
and it's only one, I think.
It might just be.
I know. So it's a tough.
You know, it's not necessarily an award. It's a yearly award, but it doesn't necessarily award a year's worth of programming.
No, it does not.
You know, it highlights the best episode.
No, because listen, the whole thing I've always said it's a little. I just don't like the fact that actors are only voting for actors. For our categories, right?
Yeah.
I feel that directors, writers, and producers should have a say.
Yeah.
Because you're just getting another different objective, a different objective set of eyes.
Yeah, that's weird, though, because I would never want myself to vote for best director because I don't know what goes into that. Do you know what I'm saying? So, like, I understand why they
That's interesting.
I would never want to vote for best
But a director should be able to vote for an actor.
I don't disagree with that, but like if they're going to be like, hey, everybody can be dispersed into different categories, I understand why they keep us separate because I'm not sure everyone's an expert in every arena.
No, you're right. You know? You're right. You're right. But I feel that a director knows acting.
Absolutely.
So they should be able to vote for actors. I feel that producers know.
Yeah.
And writers know.
Yeah.
Right? We might not know what goes into writing because we don't.
Right.
We don't know I know what goes into producing because I see it every day.
Sure.
But I don't – and directing, but – you know, I could maybe, since I've directed and I like directing, I could see something that someone else maybe may not be able to.
Right.
But that doesn't qualify me to judge directors.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So but I feel the other way around. It could work that way. But it's just always a weird thing because you have only four shows now. You know, voting for each other, our friends voting for each other or not, or shows voting for each other or not. That's always the big controversy is, hey, is everyone voting just for their show or are you voting outside of your show?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm trying to be objective in everything, but Finola this year was amazing.
And she didn't get in top five or whatever,
Michelle Stafford was amazing when Nathan died.
Gosh,
and Kirsten was amazing.
Right, yeah.
You know, so it's like, so then we have this great pool of people that you start splitting the votes.
Oh, sure,
like Laura and Maura were in lead.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So we have to vote for Laura and Maura.
Right.
If it was just Maura or Laura, we could have 30 people voting for Maura.
And you have to put one and two.
You have to put one and two.
So like you can't put both at one.
No. So how it works basically is people will submit themselves, which is kind of weird. You have to submit yourself, right? And then you have to submit yourself to vote, register yourself to vote, and then they'll send you your login and they'll say, okay, Steve, you're voting lead actress. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So there could be 25. Tapes waiting to be watched for lead actress.
Yeah.
So I have to narrow it down to 10.
Right.
Okay. So I vote for the top 10
of
those 25. Right?
Yeah.
And
but that vote still
carries over.
It's still the winning vote, right?
It is the winning vote.
So it's the top 10, but whoever got the most average of first place votes.
So they'll take the top five, and those are your nominations, right. But the vote's already in.
The vote's already in.
Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. Because before it was a two-step process. You do the 10.
And then a blue panel or whatever.
And then vote again.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, man. That's why you're right. And I've always said it. When I was a part of it, even if I didn't necessarily feel this 100% in the moment when I was there, but I would press this as how it's just a great party with people that you respect and admire that you're happy to celebrate with, because ultimately that's what you got to focus on and be present, because it's such an amazing experience. It is such a unique opportunity. Like it's things that people dream about, to be on an award show and be nominated, and it is so special, and to get dressed up and just lift your friends up and celebrate the work that you do. It is an amazing night, and when you get wrapped up in winning and being frustrated that you didn't win or frustrated that your friend didn't win,
sure,
you can lose. And I understand the of course you're going to be disappointed, and of course you got to allow yourself to be excited about the wins and the whatever, but it's ultimately a unique experience that you don't want to miss out on by prioritizing things that aren't going to last.
Right.
You know,
and the thing was, on the red carpet, how you doing? You're here for the Emmys. And I said, look, man, we're still celebrating daytime, right?
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and that's 25 years I've been doing, 27 or whatever. And we're still having the Emmys.
Yeah.
And there's four shows left. And obviously there's all the other daytime talk shows.
Right.
Cooking shows. And I'll tell you, man, it's interesting because, online and digital stuff is coming to the forefront.
Yeah.
It's a whole new ball game. Like, right. They do the creative Emmys the day before.
Right. And a lot of the big awards for digital come out then.
A lot of them for digital come out then. And now you're seeing Amazon Digital, Apple TV.
Yeah.
It's all, it's all happening.
There's a change coming. It's in the daytime awards.
I know. It's weird. It's not night.
There's nothing that precludes people from streaming at night. Right?
Correct. Yes.
I don't know what qualifies. Is it the kind of content
they're making?
I think
it's going to have to change.
Well, because, other daytime streaming shows like on Amazon that are like shows that are on Netflix. Stranger Things is not in the daytime Emmys. That's not a streaming show. That's a primetime show,
sure.
Primetime network show. So I think it's maybe the kind of content.
Style. Maybe.
Yeah. They might be like, oh, you're a soap opera, so you're in the daytime.
Maybe.
You know, like
The Bay, right?
Right. Yeah.
So The Bay, ahead of its time. It's been on a while.
Yeah.
And it's won enough awards. Because I saw them. I go, how many? There has to be a maximum level here.
Right.
Because
for a while Ellen took herself out of consideration. I think she's back, but maybe not for host, but her show won.
The Bay has won so many Emmys that it's
at
just
what point,
it's
at what point
I'm like,
do you
dude, you've won enough. Stop. But you're right. So it's just interesting because there is a shift, right? Even like with the Academy Awards, it's like some Netflix movies can't be nominated because they're not in the theater.
Right. So they go under Movie of the Week or something in the prime times.
Right.
Yeah.
Or you're just like Jeff Bezos and you're going to buy a theater.
Well, yeah, just to have it air in the theater.
Yeah, and so is Netflix.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're going to buy theaters.
Right.
And put it in there for 2 weeks.
It's amazing.
Nobody comes. Who cares?
Doesn't matter.
It's in for
it's
two
eligible.
Weeks. It's eligible. Right.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. The game's changing a little bit that way, for sure.
Yeah. So that's why we got to make our movie.
We have to make many movies.
Many movies.
Or at least a series.
That's right.
I've been thinking about it more, though, honestly.
I know.
Because especially after seeing a lot of these new digital series coming out, I'm like, dude, we can do one of these.
Yeah. You know what I've been thinking about?
Oh, no.
I've been thinking about Will DeVry. and how he tweeted yesterday about how we never invite him on. Well,
which,
guess friggin' what, people?
Yeah, Will. Don't ever do that again, Will.
Will
was just joking, by the way.
He was.
I know.
This is going to be fun.
This is the difference with Twitter. It's like you can't just write things because people take it for complete face value.
Man.
And Will and I, obviously, we asked Will months ago, and he couldn't do it. And then I was texting back and forth over the weekend. He's like, yeah, I think I can do it. I'm going to do it. And then he posts that. I go, Will, what are you doing? I just talked to you 4 minutes ago, and now you post this on Twitter. Like, hey,
under the bus.
When are you guys having me on? You've been through the whole cast twice. By the way, we have not.
We haven't made it through the whole cast.
We haven't made it through the whole cast.
Some people had back-to-back episodes because their episodes ran long.
Yeah,
we didn't interview twice.
But anyway,
we're so excited.
I've known Will for a long time.
It's
awesome to have Will DeVry with us.
And here we,
the man,
are. Oh my gosh!
The
myth. I feel like we've teased this in the world,
Canadian,
in our brains, in our hearts, in our loins. The tease has been going on.
It wasn't that hard. You just had to pay my fee, like I said, to New Bradford. And of course,
we did. I didn't know that
your fee was paid entirely in mayonnaise, though.
That's a different industry.
That's a weird. That was weird, Bradford.
Doll heads and mayonnaise. That is the currency. Weird.
Bradford's been working in other industries since he's been away from the show.
He's been cooped up in this room too long. That's the problem. I got to get him outside, dude. Will DeVry!
Hey, thank you for having me.
Hey, that was amazing.
You're in the running with Michael Easton for lowest timbre on our show.
I've got to be careful I don't fall into my Batman voice.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do you have a little bit of one?
If I'm not careful.
Because you speak pretty low on the show.
Yeah,
right?
I do. I can. I honestly, it depends who I'm with. Mm. And it certainly depends on the situation, just as,
Sure.
Which I noticed there was a situation like this before. Hold on, folks. I have to rearrange my mic here.
Adjust it.
Just go ahead and grab it.
You can lift it up. There you go, Dave.
All right, lift it up.
There you go. Perfect.
So, like today, Frank gave you guys that note to have Michael Chad, a.k.a. stand up.
Yeah.
Because, Chad Michael Murray?
Because you guys were talking, some discreet stuff.
Yeah.
And he, as Frank put it, seemed more interested in his pastry, so.
Chad was eating a pastry?
Well, he wasn't really eating it, but we met him at Charlie's Pub to chat. And
dude, your business is thriving.
My business?
Yeah, Charlie's.
Charlie's
Pub is booming.
Julian's business.
Sorry.
It's hard. We get you mixed up.
You know, for those of you who haven't heard that story, the first time I saw Roger Howarth, he was in the green room, and I was fairly new here. And I was walking by the green room, and I sort of stopped and backed up. And
you went, oh, Roger
no,
Howarth?
I was like, hey, how's it going, Todd?
Thinking his name was actually Todd?
And when he kind of looks at me, right, and he goes, actually, it's Roger. And I go, oh, dude, I'm so sorry. I knew that. He goes, but that's fine. No, you could call me Trevor St. John if you like.
That's funny.
And then he never said another word to me for like 3 years.
He's still not talking to you.
Yeah, no.
That's funny, dude.
That's amazing.
So how long have you been here on the show now?
6 years. My first contract was 4 years. And I was off from July to October. So, yeah, I'm coming up on 6 years. Yeah.
Wow, man.
In October,
nice.
Yeah.
So, nice. Okay, so that's...
Now, rumor has it I have your old room. Is that true, Steve Burton? Do I have your old room?
Which room is it?
Number 7.
Dude, I wish I could tell you the
Seriously?
Truth.
There's been so many rooms.
I've moved a lot. Just like in my real life.
Yeah.
The same thing here.
Yeah. I don't know how you do it.
I moved like 4 times on this row. Because it was room 11 at one point.
Why would you put yourself through that?
I don't know, Will. Just to change it up.
Really?
Yeah, but your room is so nice.
I was going to say, I can't imagine moving.
It's unrecognizable.
No. I mean, this looks like, a freaking flea market. So your room's nice. It's like nice and dark in there. I could sleep all day.
It's not so dark because I've got warm lighting. That's
warm. No, it's not. Your room's done
I feel
really
like
well.
Your room is like a museum that you'd walk into on Hollywood Boulevard.
Dude, the guy's got 400 pictures on the wall.
I know. Yeah. And it's like...
Of himself!
No. No, there's only two...
Well, you did put a picture of yourself on my door. Thank you very much.
In my underwear. Well, not my underwear. It was
pretty close.
I'm wearing like
I told you
PJs.
I'm not casting any parts. coming up.
Well,
soon.
The mayonnaise. I was a little confused.
Please knock and bring your mayo.
But it's a tribute to old Hollywood. You have a real, like a real affection. And,
yeah. What
and
is
respect
that? Will?
For, which is great. As well, he's a film and TV actor.
I love old film. I'm really like in love with old cinema, black and white, and I love to watch those old movies.
Because for people who don't know, all our rooms are obviously pretty close together, and when I walk by Will's room, he's usually watching a black and white movie,
TCM
Ponderosa, Rifleman, or something.
Yeah, Have Gun, Will Travel.
Have Gun, Will Travel.
Old
yeah,
Steve McQueen's old show.
Love it.
Yeah.
So what is it? What
is that always been?
I don't know. I was definitely, as probably a few people out there could probably feel the same way. I was definitely feel like I was born in the wrong
era.
Country?
Era. Decade.
Yeah. Country.
No, it's funny. It's funny. I, speaking of country, born in Canada, nobody really knows this, but my mother brought me, being American, my dad's Canadian, my mother brought me straight to the American consulate. So as a kid, growing up speaking French, I had a freaking American passport. And every time I would have to sign up for hockey or, or baseball in this French province, bringing your American passport was like,
not good.
They're
like, no.
You get into fights all the time with the Frenchies, and you're like, you're speaking completely their language. My last name is French, Simard. Like, it's not, William Simard. Je parle en français. You know?
Will Johnson.
Yeah. I'm like, French before Anglophone, as they say. Francophone, Anglophone. But that didn't matter. It was the American passport. So here's the deal. No. Steve gets me on the show. We agree to do the show. And just as a joke, I put out this,
you don't
this
have to
tweet.
Do a disclaimer, dude. It's fine.
You've already been through the entire cast, like, twice. All the recurring characters, like, all 80 characters. You've bypassed me twice. I think it's time to have me on the show. So I'm figuring, smart being Steve being a funny guy, he would like come back with a witty comment.
A clever
I did
retort.
Actually. Yeah. You didn't see it though.
Apparently I didn't, because all I saw was his text to me with a screen capture. Hey, did you tweet this?
I go, am I missing something?
And I go,
Because people take tweets for face value.
Well, dude.
And I'm like, wait a minute. I was just texting this guy 3 minutes ago, and he posted this. I'm like, he's either completely drunk, he's crazy, or he's having fun.
No, that was me.
That was Bradford.
That was the drunk.
Completely
one.
Drunk, completely drunk, crazy, having fun. No, dude, it's all good. Yeah. We've known each other a long time, so I'm not. I never sweat it, bro.
Yeah. No. Because then he thought maybe the audience might not take it as a joke. And so I was like, well, I'll tell you I'll post the disclaimer.
Well, because like there is no space for interpretation on Twitter. People always just
unfortunately there
take
isn't.
It at face value and get angry. That's the kind of like the
order unless of operations. Unless it's somebody who knows you. Yeah. There's a lot of fans that do know us personally.
Right.
And
so
people
they know I've got no sense of humor.
Exactly. They're like, why is Will so serious all the time?
Yeah.
Serious.
In terms of people that don't know you guys in real life, I wonder who they think in their mind is more serious, you or you. They're like,
oh, for God's sake. I'm definitely like, that was the first thing that Rebecca said to me was like, you're just like a really serious guy. Yeah, so I think that's what the problem was. I think I grated on people like here in a weird way for the longest time. And Frank would always happy to remind me every day. People don't understand you. I go, well,
what do you want me to do?
I mean, I'm just a serious guy.
Have you always been serious?
Probably, yeah. Just from my background, my upbringing, parents getting divorced, living in a foster home, some other serious shit that happened.
You just kind of became an introvert to a point?
It's not so much an introvert. It's just like, if we get together on a personal level, then you'll get to know me, but I'm not going to try to impress you walking down the hall.
Sure.
Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then I get here, and of course, I'm just trying to do my job, and, I think of everybody as being peers. We're peers.
Yeah.
And we're all doing this. We're on the same game.
Same team.
And you know, the guys, you know, you, I mean, Jason's obviously very familiar with Dominic and
Steve.
He's
you
got
mean?
A great sense of humor. I have this issue.
Todd and Jason.
Look,
have you ever seen a guy so happy?
Yeah.
Todd and Jason.
So Steve, yeah. Yeah. Sorry, folks.
It's fine. Dude, honestly, I've done it before.
Yeah.
When I'm talking to people.
Yeah.
You know, so the Emmys, right?
Yeah.
I saw, Garen, who plays right. Oscar, right?
Oh, okay.
So I'm talking to him. I call him Drew.
You called who Drew?
I called Garen Drew.
Jeez.
Is he
a twin too?
No, but because obviously Drew on the show, and then Drew Garrett played Michael. When Michael was,
Lord.
Right.
So I was just like all wow. messed up, wow. man.
Sure,
I had people coming at me. I'm like, hey, what's up? Drew.
You know who I have a hard time here is
I've made an
Sophia
ass out of myself.
Plays Sasha here.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And every time I'm like, I know when you have to stop yourself before you talk to somebody, it's like, let me just get this straight before I open my mouth.
Totally.
So anyway, yeah. Just to go back to
anyway,
Dom and then
yes.
Dom and Jason Thompson, they like to rag on everybody. And when I first got here about 6 months into my gig, they're like, you know, dude, when you first got here, you know, you were kind of an asshole a little bit, you know. And I was like, that's funny. Did you guys, the three of you standing right here, did you ever think it was the three of you who were the assholes?
And like, no.
Yeah, okay, we were. That's cool.
Fair enough.
So we, you know, but yeah. So Dom and I, we bust each other's chops, although he's really good at it.
Oh, he's
Dom?
Dom's a classic Canadian ball buster.
Yeah,
but he doesn't take it so well. He gets really flustered.
He gets a little
red-faced. Oh, no. If he's good at dishing it.
Right? Oh, yeah.
But if you dish it,
his
fists start to...
Yeah, he clenches. Those, you can see his jawbones, you know.
Yeah, what do you mean by that, dude?
Yeah, it's weird. His neck gets big. His gold chains shrink up. You know? I'm like, Dom, just calm down, dude. Take a breath.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah. So going back a little bit. I've known you for a little over 6 years, but I've looked at your IMDb. So when did your attraction to the arts start? Mm. Like, was it an outlet for you? Was it I'm not sure how much you want to talk about going back, but like, I'm interested about you talking about that seriousness, like that. I'm sure it was to protect yourself a little bit too, right? Like,
oh, for sure.
Yeah.
As a kid, when you're going through this trauma. You know, like I failed grade three. My parents were separated. I mean, this guy who is supposed to be my big brother is like they didn't screen them back then as, you know,
yeah.
for, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stuff.
And yeah, stuff. And, you know, we got all this stuff. I'm living in a foster home. My you know, like I didn't even remember seeing my mom for like 2 years.
Wow.
And she had to remind me, like, she goes, well, no, I like, don't you remember I pick you up on the weekends? And I go, oh. I kind of do, but like the time frame is way off.
That's
so
a traumatic thing, dude.
You just start protecting yourself.
Of course, yeah.
And then when my parents started thinking about getting back together, you know, and going back to your point here, like hiding, we were on like a therapy session in Montreal, and the doctor is talking to my parents, and then he finally turns to me and he goes, hey, well, so what do you think about this? And I'm like, you know, 9 years old or whatever. And I sort of pulled the shirt over my head and I said, why do you want to talk to me about that? You know, like I'm it's just a constant hiding, right?
Yeah.
And so you do build a cocoon around yourself. And before you know it, you're as an adult, it really starts to get in your way. And that's where I had to, you know, at some point you start to realize that you're getting in your own way. And, you know, you have trouble letting people in and you got to kind of reverse that.
So what a fascinating career path then, right?
So I was taking business in school and college.
Okay.
And
with no other – you had never done theater before?
Just like everybody else in high school.
Okay.
Drama.
Yeah.
A little bit of drama.
I never thought – you know, you're living in Montreal. It's like growing up in
Ohio.
You know, Ohio.
Right. Yeah,
so
you'd be like,
there's not – yeah, you're never –
there's no clear path to what
– Well, there's not only a path. You don't even think – you don't even see the path.
Right, exactly.
Much less
clear I'm
path.
From a small town in New Hampshire. So, like, I get you.
Yeah.
So I was taking business in college down in Florida. I'd moved to Florida at that point. My first year of college was in Montreal, and my mother moved down a year before I did, and then I kind of stayed behind until the household. And I finally moved down, went to University of Central Florida, Daytona campus, and, you know, there's a bunch of us, like couple of friends. You get a girlfriend, and she has a girlfriend, and she has a boyfriend, and we're all hanging out. And he's like, hey, you want to take some acting classes in Orlando? And I'm like, sure, you know, that's cool.
Being the Mickey Mouse Club kind of thing?
No, it was like this guy, this kind of drifter that would, his name was Jeremy Whalen, and he was, you know, from L.A. or whatever.
Sure, yeah.
Theater guy. And we started taking some acting classes, and I was like, I really dug it, man. It was really, you know, it was interesting because you could tell there was a difference right away. I could see people that didn't get it, like the acting, they just didn't get it.
Sure.
And I felt like I got it, you know, like I just, whatever. And I started working right. Somebody approached me at the end of the 10 weeks, and an agent, and I booked my first audition.
In Florida?
In Florida.
Yeah.
And then I just got my SAG SAG card in Florida.
Taft-Hartley or SAG?
No, yeah. SAG, yeah.
What were they booking out of Florida?
A lot of commercials.
Yeah.
A lot of commercials. And then we had a burgeoning television and film industry down there when Sequest, Roy Scheider, Sequest.
Yes, NBC, Jonathan Brandis. And,
you know, bless his heart and rest in peace.
Yeah.
They were all down there, and I met I got a huge guest star on the opening two-hour season premiere.
Oh, wow.
And I worked with Peter DeLuise, and Peter's like, hey, dude, you know, you're really good. And I was like, oh, thanks. He goes, where are you from? In Canada. He goes, oh, you know what? Right after we're done this, he goes, you should go up to Vancouver, because he used to work on 21 Jump Street.
Yeah.
And he had an agent up there. And so he, you know, first thing he says to me, he goes, oh, hold on. Before I call my agent, he goes, say S-O-R-R-Y. And I go, sorry? He goes, oh, okay, you're good.
No sorries here?
No sorry.
Yeah, no sorry.
So, yeah, sure enough, he called, and we shot this thing. And the day after it aired, I packed my Cherokee and drove up to Vancouver.
That's a hike.
Wow.
And I begged, borrowed, and stealed into the best acting classes. It was this Ivana Chubbuck.
Yeah.
who was doing some classes up there. And, she might not be the best acting coach down here, but she was certainly the best one up there.
No, she's got a good name.
Good reputation. Yeah, good reputation. I'm just saying, whatever. People have got different theories.
Sure, so sure.
Put her on a pedestal, but people have got different theories. And so I got into her class, and they gave me a lot of confidence, and I started working right away. And, you know, to like get into this business and start doing primetime and make a living at it immediately is
amazing.
Pretty a great, you know, situation.
So you started working up, you started auditioning right away up there and working.
Yeah. Yeah. I pretty much made a living as an actor, like from the moment I got up there.
What year was that, Will?
I got up there October 24th of 1994.
Wow. And at that point, did you reconcile, were you putting yourself into the work, or were you just good at playing characters? Do you know what I mean? Like,
I wasn't, you know, that's interesting because, you know, it's all so subjective acting. And I find somebody looks at you and goes, yeah, I'll give you a story. I'm reading, and this is kind of relates to my story, but I'm reading Robert Mitchum biography that this guy wrote. And Robert Mitchum was basically a C movie actor doing a lot of like Westerns and stuff like they all were back in the day. And he goes in to audition for this huge movie that this is like an A-list movie called G.I. Joe. And they screen tested him like literally 30 freaking times.
Wow.
And at the end of the screen test, the director comes to him. The director, he goes, Robert, honestly, he goes, I just can't tell if you're the absolute best actor I've ever seen in my life or the absolute worst actor I've ever seen in my life. Because he's so understated.
Yeah.
But he's just able to deliver this line. But he's so understated that you're just like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I finally had this guy come up to me because that's more my style. And he goes, yeah, you just don't know how to create a character. And so I at that moment, I thought I got it. I was like, oh, you know what? Some people need to see this and some people need to see that. So I started taking different scenes, I got a different acting coach who was more theater.
Yeah.
Started doing classic material, Tennessee Williams and Simon O'Neill, and British and characters and accents.
Start doing Tennessee Williams. That'll build some catharsis, won't it, for
you?
Yeah.
Yeah. I figured out how to, you know, I'm going to still do what I want to do, but at least I know now that there's a difference.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, you can tell, Will, because, you know, I didn't, you know, we knew each other before GH, but I'd never really seen your work. And then I really appreciate how understated it is, because I feel that in this medium, you can get caught in traps sometimes. And watching you, Will, it's like, I'm like, this guy's, I get it. And I get why. Obviously, you're working, but, you know, especially film, you do so little sometimes, it's great. You know, and it's kind of, I don't want to say what I've been accused of, not doing anything.
Yeah, yeah.
But the understate, you know, and you look at those old, the old-time greats, and there wasn't a lot of, it wasn't, you know, big and you know, over, I don't want to say overacting, because you can still overact and be believable and truthful.
Right.
You know, it's just the, you know, being still and being subtle and being so understated. There's a lot to it. And I like watching you for that fact. So.
Well, I do appreciate that, because, you know, I mean, I have, you know, such respect for you, and you talk about characters, and you've built such a, you know, because you're so different, Bradford, than your
character. Yeah.
God love you for saying that. Thanks. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just, you know, I don't know if people know that, but you really are. So.
Well, it's interesting, you know, like because my character is not known for his stillness nor his understatement.
Right, you're the exact opposite.
I don't even know how you do it. I listen to your dialogue and I'm like, there's no way.
Well, I'll let you talk, obviously. But that's what's so interesting, is you got a guy like this who can be big and full of energy but still so believable and vulnerable, right?
Yeah.
Where you feel for this character,
You're
like, this guy's not making this up. This isn't fake. It's not. Bad acting. This is the
character. There's a difference between caricature.
Sure.
Right.
And some people can get caught up in a caricature as opposed to character without authenticity.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But you've managed to build a real authenticity to your character.
Thanks, man. Well, but and honestly, I am a little, as an actor, you know, especially doing what I did here for so long, when I get out into the single camera world, I tend to think I need to do more. And because I want to feel it, I want to earn it, I want to really like put all the effort I can into it and do it right, you know. And so what I've been actually trying to develop is to do less, and so I, you know, you two, JPS, like I've watched you guys.
Oh, he's so good.
And like in the same way, like doing less but still being so specific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And God, the power that you can have with that stillness is really lovely. And boy, like it's something that I would love to integrate into my work. I just, you know what it is? I just got to somehow I got to feel like I earned
Bradford,
it.
Here's the thing.
Yeah, that's interesting.
You know what I mean?
I'm going to just as a great, you know, advice that, like Larry Moss, who I just, honestly, he changed my life. Like, he really did. It just comes down to exactly what you're saying, but to boil it down even further is, you know, as an actor, you're enough.
Yeah. Yeah, that.
You are enough.
And isn't that the thing that people tell you in acting classes and you start crying, right?
Isn't that,
you know what?
It's true.
But that's the thing. It's like we, in our lives, when does the universe tell us that unless we tell it to ourselves, right?
Yeah. Well, especially in this business.
Right.
And I think that's where this sort of like this small ego comes in to play once in a while.
Sure.
You got to remember to check the door, which is, like you said, you're busy propping yourself up so much that you do have to, every once in a while, you need to remember to.
Yeah. I mean, it's just an interesting business because it's weird because there's this weird thing is where you have to have some type of ego,
yeah,
or confidence.
Oh, you'll die,
right? Or you're dead, right?
You're dead,
right? But then you have to have the other part, Will, that we're talking about, just the humility and and being humble and being able to kind of check it when you check it, because not a lot of people can check it.
Well, but it's interesting. You know? It's ego, but it's also insecurity, right? Because it's
100%.
Like, okay, well, I've done this. I am this guy. I've got these jobs. I've earned this. I can't let anybody know that I'm not good enough. Because, you know, so it's ego. So you use the ego to cover that insecurity, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's helps you deal with that insecurity. And it's not necessarily ego, self-centered ego.
Sure.
It's just healthy confidence. But sometimes you have to use, like I know for me, in certain acting classes that I've been into, it's like that self-protective ego gets in my way because I'm insecure that people will look at me as not worthy of what I've achieved.
It's interesting, though, because that's your most powerful tool. The stuff that you're trying to hide is actually your most powerful tool, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
It is a fascinating industry, and honestly, in the end, I stopped trying to. I hear actors say they look at a script, right, or they look at sides, and they go, "Oh, I wonder what they want."
Yeah,
that's like the worst thing for me.
Sure,
I'm like, you know what? Because another piece of great advice is that, and I think we know this instinctively, is that not a lot of people can make a choice and commit to that choice, right? They'll like, for instance, I'm in Larry's class, and he goes, you know, these actors are doing like the scene from A Wonderful Play, and he goes, you know, stop. He goes, what were you guys doing? Like, he goes, you didn't really make a choice. And he goes, oh, but Larry, you know, we tried it 40 different ways. And he goes, that's fine. You should try, but you didn't pick one.
Right.
And the thing is, this is the most fascinating part of it is, in casting, you can go into a room and you can make the completely worst decision that you could possibly make, but you commit to it.
And
you will be one of probably like 20 actors again, and you'll be the only one that committed to something.
Yeah,
right. But it was the wrong one. Yeah. And the director is going to be impressed with you because you freaking committed.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You might not book the job, but you might get remembered.
You might come back. Will.
Right. And he'll be like,
I mean,
hey.
I've been told that. He's like, look, dude, I'm going to be honest with you. Like, you know, I had to work with you a little bit on what I wanted from the scene, but I wanted to work with you because you committed to what you did.
Right.
And I'm like, cool. But that's the thing. When people say, oh, I wonder what they want, you know, I go, you know what? No.
Right.
That you get, don't do what you need to script analysis, man. Do what you want to do, and they'll be more impressed with what you want to do.
Right.
Don't disregard the script,
the information, the given information.
Because I've seen people do beautiful, like these beautiful, this classic material and turn it into a contemporary piece.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's just like the worst thing you could. You can't do Shakespeare like it's.
So, my lord.
Valley, you know, or you can't do Shakespeare as a valley girl.
Right.
You know, that's not what I'm saying.
Right. No, I know. Yeah.
Commit to something.
No, it's
make
a good
decision.
Point. It's super 101, acting 101.
But nobody does it.
Because
like you said, they're so fearful.
Yeah.
Well, and it becomes
Here, though, that's a good lesson, Will, for here. And it's a good reminder for me, too. Hey, make a choice in the scene because we do so many scenes, right? So it's like, have an opinion. Make a choice.
That's great. Have an opinion and put your shoulder into it.
You know what I mean?
That opinion.
Yeah.
Let me see your opinion.
Have it. Yeah. Right. You know? And that's why I think certain characters probably stand out because either they're written with more of an opinion than most of us are.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, like Shiloh, for example, right?
Yeah.
He's written a certain way.
Sure.
He's playing it great, but his character has an opinion.
Right.
And you know that, right? But with us who are here, you have to have an opinion.
Yeah.
Because you do so many scenes and you're like, oh, man, they're doing another scene. What scene is this? What are we doing? So I love that you reminded me of that because when I look at my stuff, I'm going to be like, okay, I'm just going to make a choice. Hey, today's episode of That's Awesome is brought to you by FabFitFun. Hey, we almost did a harmony there.
That's what I was trying to do.
A seasonal subscription box with full-size beauty, fitness, fashion, and lifestyle products.
What size are they, Steve?
They are full size.
Full.
No travel size here, boy.
Sizes. They're not bite size. They're full size.
That's right.
Oh, so that eye cream will last you longer than 2 days. I hate 2-day eye cream. I want eye cream that lasts me for a month so I can see what it does to my bags.
Dude, stop with the bags. Each box contains amazing products from brands like
Kate Somerville, Dr. Brandt, Anthropology. And more.
And more.
And more.
It retails for $49.99, but always has a value of over $200.
I mean, isn't that crazy?
Yes.
Always over $200.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how they make money.
I know, right? I think they're just nice.
They're very nice.
So, but if you check out FabFitFun.com and use our code AWESOME10, AWESOME10, you can save an extra $10 off your first box, making that first box only $39.99. $39.99.
You got to try. I'm just saying they got to try it once because it's so nice to get a gift in the mail. Paying for it.
Oh, my gosh.
But now, like, with credit cards, you don't really feel like you're paying for it until the month, next month. But you got to just try it.
You just open
get
that.
Get the FabFitFun.
You open that box and you're just, sunlight comes out of the box and these things.
And three angels fly out with harpsichords.
That you didn't know you needed. It might be a cool scarf. It might be a beauty product.
Dude, I got earphones. It was amazing.
I mean, it's stunning. They are thoughtful. Things they are it's like having your own personal curator for cool stuff.
Awesome 10 is the code. Check it out
at fabfitfun.com. Pluto TV is the leading free streaming television service. It's easy and completely legal, and yes, you can watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies for free.
I know you love that. We'll watch over 100 TV channels and thousands of movies on demand, all completely free. Pluto TV. Never ask for a credit card. You don't even need to sign up.
You can download Pluto TV on all your favorite devices, including your iPhone, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, smart TVs, PlayStation, and anywhere else you stream.
So what are you waiting for?
I got no idea.
Never pay for TV again by downloading Pluto TV.
And it was interesting. I was watching. I was at Julian's place of establishment, and I was watching JPS do a scene, and it was just two people sitting at a coffee thing in a scene that could have just been oh, what are you doing today? I'm doing this today. I'm doing this today. I'm doing this today. Oh, you're doing that today? I'm doing this today. And yet I was captivated because he had all those questions answered. I knew exactly what he was trying to do, even though he wasn't saying it outright, and I knew exactly how he felt about the person he was talking to, even though it wasn't even about how we felt about the person. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah. And so you can make anything interesting if you have some of those questions answered, right?
And he's also so good. And I find, you know, look, it's daytime. We can't forget that.
Sure.
So if we do have a scene about coffee,
right,
you can show the other person a lot of chemistry. You can flirt with that person.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
You can look at them and look at their chest or whatever. You know, you're a guy, you're
a
girl.
I'm seeing something happening right here. Yeah.
Yeah, he just looked at my chest again.
I right. know.
Yeah. But my chesticles.
And you're right. Yeah.
So, it's amazing.
You know, but it's, you know, so there's, you can make something out of nothing as well. So.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't know who said it, but it was interesting. They said, it was a producer that I had worked with along the way, and they said, I can watch someone, the good actors, I can watch their scenes on their side, and I can tell who they're talking to.
Mm. Yeah.
Right? Mm. I know their relationship by how
the relationship's so important.
Right. Yeah. The relationship. I know who that guy's talking to. I know if he's talking to Alexis or who. I know if it's Sam, I know the relationship. I know how he acts with Sam. I know how he acts with Alexis.
So important.
So interesting, right?
It is.
That's an interesting perspective of,
right.
Hey,
because go ahead.
Go ahead, dude. Yeah.
Oh, no, yeah. No, no. I was just going to say that's such a great point because people say, oh, he's better with this and he's better with that. But I'm like, well, there's a distant, like Tamara and I are more on a serious level.
Yeah.
While Nancy Lee Ron has just got, you know, she's kind of out there, and so you have a different playfulness.
Yeah, you have different energy too, of course.
Sort of see the playfulness as like chemistry, so
sure.
You know, quote unquote chemistry.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating, but it should be that way.
Yeah, and it, you know, the thing is, I mean, obviously I don't want to say the blessing and the curse is the blessing is that we get to work here all the time. Mm-hmm. And then when you're paired with different people, the fans may not like it or agree with it because they're so used to you and whatever Alexis may bring out the side, right? She's going to bring out a different side than Tamara's character would.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how people are.
Yeah.
Right. You have different friends. They bring out different sides of you.
Well, sure.
You know, I'm not going to like Michael Easton was so intellectual and writing poetry and, you know, us two dumbasses are sitting there with him, you know,
right.
I mean, he's going to bring out a different side. God bless you, Bradford, than you are.
Yeah.
You're like video games and beer. I'm like, hey, you're my friend.
Michael Leeson, just read some poetry to me. I
fall asleep.
Yeah. No, you know? But that is part of the human element that we're trying to, part of why we're actors, we're telling human stories, and humans have different reactions around different people. Like, you know, and that's not complex at all.
It's funny because when I work with Kelly, I do like to, I find myself to be my most playfulness with Kelly.
And she's your stepdaughter? No.
No, she's my daughter.
Daughter.
Yeah. Yeah.
You mean that? You mean in? You mean
Will DeVry was more playful
prior?
Back, yeah, prior, backstage.
Oh, backstage.
Because you guys did Port Charles together too, right?
She was there when I did it, but we didn't do it together.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It was only like a 4-episode stint, and it was mostly with Torsten K.
Oh, okay. Torsten, yes.
What kind of creature Torsten's were you?
Great.
I wasn't. I was actually a professor mythology.
Oh, okay.
And I had to come in there, you know, because they were all had all these crazy stories over there. And so I had to be, you know.
I love that.
I had to bring back this mythology that, well, this mythology is not, maybe not so mythology, might actually be real.
Oh.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
Right.
So, so you were in Vancouver working, and then what brought you down, like, to take...
I think a lot of actors make personally.
Yeah.
Except for Barry freaking Pepper, who comes down here and goes, oh, let me just see what happens. Gets Saving Private Ryan.
Right.
Excuse me. you can bleep that out.
Yeah.
Barry Pepper. He comes down and books Saving Private Ryan. The rest of us should probably wait until you get like some hot credit up in Vancouver on an American show.
Sure.
For me, that none of that quite happened. I ended up booking from Vancouver. All my children.
Ah, okay.
Okay, so, but you did a bunch of primetime up there?
Yeah.
Like series and movie of the weeks?
Yeah.
Up in Vancouver?
A lot of movie of the weeks. Okay. A lot of primetime, yeah. A lot of guest stars.
So then your first kind of endeavor was into American
TV. Yeah, what happened was I was down here. I was shooting Nash Bridges. While I was down here shooting Nash Bridges up in San Francisco, I got an audition I got an offer for Port Charles.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, Mark just offered it to me. They want to know if you can do an Irish accent. Of course I could do an Irish accent. So I spent the next week learning an Irish accent.
Is that the question?
Just never say no.
Yeah. Can you fence?
Yes, of course.
Fencing. I'm a fencing professional.
Right. Yeah, so unless it's the next day.
Right.
But yeah, so I got my Irish accent down pat. And then
good
I auditioned for All My Children. Didn't hear anything for months. Back up in Vancouver, and they're like, hey, we need you to audition for this role. I'm like, this is so familiar. And turns out that I realized months later that it was actually the same audition. And then I got a call that they wanted me to fly out.
Did they forget you or something? Like, how did that?
I don't know.
They probably just put it on hold for a little while.
I think that's what happened. I think they were always interested.
Okay.
And then they're like, okay, we need to get back into this.
But it was the same material.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I guess it was like, oh, he is who we thought he was. Oh,
okay. Right, yeah. Sure.
You are who I thought you were.
Right. Yeah, right. If anybody knows football.
Yeah.
I went out there and, you know, you're just looking at all these, like, really beautiful men. And you're just like, eh, who cares? They can't act.
Nice.
And so you walk
there
into
that
the
feeling
scene.
Of power.
There's always something you can do to trick your brain.
Totally.
To
give you the irrational confidence.
To keep you grounded. Yeah, to keep you grounded and keep you present.
Right, yeah. So you were in New York for how long?
This is a great story.
I can't wait.
Go ahead.
So I'm there for 3 months, and it's like when the soap started to flounder. Well, they were almost – it's not that they're already floundering, but they're almost like, should we cancel these? At the point where should we cancel all these
soaps? So what year was that?
2003.
Okay.
January of 2000, I got it in December 2002, got there in January of 2003, and it was like a revolving door of actors because they're just panicking, right?
They just couldn't.
Ratings are going down.
Yeah.
They didn't know what they were doing. And so I go to Jeannie Burke, our executive producer, on a Tuesday. I'm there for 3 months, and things seem to be going well. I'm working every day.
Yeah.
I go, Jeannie, do you have a moment? Sure, Will, come on in. So listen, it's like a revolving door of actors around here, and I was just kind of curious, like, I don't know. I kind of want to buy a condo. what do you think?
That's amazing.
I was like, you know, do you think that's like a good idea? She goes, Will. She goes, we just had a focus group. You're testing like through the roof. Like you're 96% approval.
The old Q ratings kind of thing?
Oh, my God. Yeah. She goes, do you know what that means? I go, I really don't, Jeannie. She goes, well, you could be here for as long as you want. You write your own ticket. I go, oh, cool, man, cool. All right. So I guess I'll buy this condo. 2 days later,
come on.
I'm in the makeup chair upstairs, and all my children. Will DeVry, could you come down to Jeannie Burke's office?
No.
Jeannie, you want to see me? Yeah, Will, come on in. So you came to me just 2 days ago, and I told you how great things were for you. I just want to let you know we had a big network meeting yesterday, Wednesday, and so they're going to fire the head writer. I go, oh. And they're bringing in an old head writer, Megan McTavish. I go, oh, okay. Well, that's really bad. She goes, well, it is, but that's not all. she goes, so the new writer is going to bring back her old favorites like Cameron Matheson and all these guys who thought they were going to go on and, you know, do movies like Josh Duhamel. And I go, oh. And they're going to make your character really like bad and kind of unredeemable. And I go, unredeemable? What does that mean? Well, anybody who knows daytime knows back in the day, if you made your character unredeemable, it meant you were on your way out the door.
Sure.
She goes, well, they're going to try to bring back together the Kane sisters and family, which was Susan Lucci's family, who was kind of splintered at that point, and they were going to bring them back together, and you're going to be the antagonist to do it. So, okay. She goes, yeah, you're going to basically go around and rape everybody.
Oh, gosh.
So.
That's unredeemable.
I go, yeah. Oh, yeah. So how long do you think I have? She goes, I would say September, maybe. And it's like April at this point. And I go, okay. She goes, and just so you know, like, I'm probably not going to be here much longer. Sure enough, poor Charles gets canceled. First thing they do is bring Julie Carruthers out to New York.
Yep.
To replace Jeannie Burke. And that's when things started to change. Like, you know, she'd bring us all up into the room and say, so we're going to do things differently now.
Yeah.
We're not going to do black dress tape anymore. We're going to do it this way. We're going to do it that way. And it just became a grind. That's right when it became a grind, where it started, you know, it was just more of an art where you'd come in and you'd get time with your scene partner.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
And then it just became, we're going to be out of here by 6 from now on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it just became about
the bottom line.
Bottom
it just
line.
Became about the money.
Everybody started getting cut. And
Wow.
So other than your job security, did you enjoy being in New York?
Loved it.
Was that the only time in your life that you'd lived there?
Yeah. I'd been there once before and for a week. And I swear to you, I saw the same guy in that week.
Yeah.
I saw him in the Empire State Building. I saw him in Midtown.
Yeah.
And I saw him again way down south.
Right.
And the only reason I reckon is because this guy was like massive, like Lou Ferrigno massive.
Yeah.
And I saw the same guy
that's so bizarre.
In New York
yeah.
three times.
I tell you, I'd run into people I know more in New York than I would anywhere else.
It is, yeah.
It's bizarre.
People think it's massive, but it's a tiny little island.
Yeah, there's not a lot of square miles to, you know, you're bound to run. And people go to the same places. So it's,
it may be high, but it's not very large.
That's true. Yeah.
So, but I loved it. I would go.
How long were you there?
If you put a gun to my head and you said, pick one place to live in the world, all right, fine, New York.
How long were you there?
So I ended up, I was there for the, till September.
So like 9 months of work.
Yeah, 9 months. And then, of course, I got nominated for that role.
Nice.
And they were like, oh, now what do we do? So they had to write me back in a sort of different, you know, ghostly way. And
right. ghostly way?
You were a ghost.
Yeah.
And then because like, you were actually dead or just a therapist?
Yeah, I was dead. Oh, yeah, Cameron Matheson's character found me hanging from a meat hook in a storage in a freezer.
That's
like I was icicles all over me.
Oh, wow.
And then from there, I ended up at the top, like in a dumpster, like a trash dump.
Wow,
they're just
dragging you around. It's like a road show.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Meat hook.
Yeah, it was like
dumpster
that,
fire.
What was that weekend at Bernie's?
You were Bernie.
Oh man. Yeah, and a lot of flashbacks with my brother, who turned out to be Torsten.
Torsten K.
Oh, yeah, right.
Nice.
So
wow.
He got the job. He got to make out with Alicia Minshew all the time.
Right, I remember
and now
that.
Alicia Minshew, oh, I love him. And, you know.
Yeah, because I came into ABC in 2006, and I remember they were a couple at that point.
They were a couple. It was supposed to be, you know, Alicia and Will.
Should have been you, man.
Should have been me.
Then where'd you go after New York?
I did. Went back to Vancouver and I got a nice series on Bravo called
The L Word?
No. I forget what it's called right now. Honestly, isn't that funny though? You start forgetting what you're like.
Yeah.
Well, when you have as many credits as you do, Will, I mean.
He does have a lot of credits.
He has a lot of credits, yeah.
So I forget. But anyway, I did a show for Bravo and then, bounced around some more and did. Ended up on Earth Final Conflict for about 4 years.
Wow.
That was just recurring. And Stargate and
Stargate's back movies. Up in Canada, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
More movies. And then right after I met Steve, actually, I don't understand. Yeah,
where did you guys meet?
I think about this all the time. We met here in California.
While you were in the ABC family or what?
No.
No. We met a different way through friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we started working together a little bit. But I have to say, like, you know, at that time we were going through the recession.
Yes.
And for some reason I never thought about, and I go back to that moment in time and I was like, what the hell was I thinking? I could have gone to Canada to, you know, earn my living. And I just,
right.
I was
this like Rebecca. 2008 to,
yeah. And I could have gone back to Canada. And for some reason, I just had a brain cramp that it just didn't even occur to me that I could go back to Canada to work and just make my living up there. So Steve and I, you know, started doing stuff together and Steve literally saved my life. Like, not kidding you. Like, we talk about, you know, genuine people who cares about people. And Steve is one of those people that, and I think it's because Steve just saw like the seriousness in me, like this sort of serious work ethic. I don't know, but he literally saved my life and we don't have to get into it too much, but you know, he saved my ass, in more ways than one. And then I ended up shortly after that, getting a very nice comedy series in Canada called Insecurity. I was lead on that. And that's when it occurred to me. I was like, why didn't I go back to Yale?
Yeah, right?
Gosh. Dude, you know, I mean, during that time, there's a lot of people just trying to survive.
Yeah.
Right? You almost went to the survival mode.
Yeah.
Because your mom was
I think that's what happened.
Florida, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Your mom was still in Florida, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you were out here and you're like, man, I got to figure this out. And, you know, you did. And you figured it out, whatever. It's all good. And then, you know, you made it through the bad times, and you went up in there. I didn't know you did a sitcom though.
Did a sitcom? Yeah, it was one camera sitcom, comedy. It's like, so the difference for people that don't know out there, a sitcom is a like three or four cameras. A comedy could also be a one camera comedy.
Yeah, right. Big Bang Theory versus Arrested Development.
Right. So it was a one camera comedy, half hour. And my character, for anybody who hasn't seen it, should go online, look up Insecurity.
I'm going to look it up.
And you know, Rebecca says to people all the time, I know you don't think that Will could be funny.
Will. That's Will's disclaimer now.
Yeah,
right?
But he is like the funniest freaking dude. Like he can.
That's awesome, dude.
So
I want to see it. That's
There's
great.
But there is a difference for me between like sitcom and comedy.
Oh,
give
sure.
me a script. I'm not funny, but if you give me a script, I'll figure it out.
Well, because if there's a good comedy script and you just...
Talk about building a character. Go see Insecurity.
Oh, good God.
Well, sure,
yeah.
But like... The especially
and you've seen the poster of me in my room, by the way. There's a poster when he said there was a picture of a lot.
Oh,
of
that's
of me.
From that show.
That's one of them was on there. So sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, yeah. You're fine. But like with single camera shows, single camera comedies, the comedy comes out of the truthfulness of the moment versus joke,
trying
you know, like set up joke.
Yes,
setup,
I'm
setup,
not
joke.
Good with that. Those beats.
Yeah.
Like
those sitcom beats, yeah. I'm not so good at. I would have to take a specific class on the
right.
beats.
Yes.
Sitcoms are more just talking in the right rhythm and being loud
rhythm.
And just getting it out.
But there, you know? I find there's a difference in comedy between sitcom and a comedy movie.
Oh, absolutely.
And a comedy TV show.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's different beats and there's different rhythm.
And there's different, you're right, yeah. There's different styles. And like if you watch The Office compared to a standard sitcom. Like
for
you said,
Two and a Half Men or Big Bang
Half
Theory.
The time, your other supporting people are setting you up for the joke.
Right. And you just you know? Say
it's
it.
It's a timing thing. Yeah. It's a rhythm thing.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, I'd like to think I'm smart enough to figure that out, but I've never literally taken that class. Like Leslie Kahn, for instance, is one of our comedy teachers in L.A. who I've never met. But I know that there's a beat that I don't get yet.
Yeah.
But
it's a style, yeah.
Yeah.
I did work a lot in comedy with Ivana Chubbuck, but it was all movies.
Yeah.
And Ivana basically was, you know, you can be really funny if you build behavior.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, and that for me, comedy is more behavior.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I would, and that's where that, like you said, you know, when I finally decided that, I can build the character. So check it out if anybody has.
Yeah, that's cool, man.
That's cool. And so, and then 2013 comes along. Insecurity lasted for a couple years?
Yeah, a couple years. Yeah, we were a big hit, season one.
Yeah.
It's a really well-written, intelligent comedy. And we had this guy who's kind of the intellectual comedian up in Canada. His name's Rick Mercer, for anybody that lives in Canada. Rick Mercer, very intellectual guy. And he was our lead-in. And so we had like a bunch of – like we had the smart Canadians that were like, oh, what's his show? Oh, it's really funny.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we were a hit. I mean, they came to us after season one and they were like, oh, my God, you guys could be on the air for 10 years.
And Will knows when he hears that.
Yeah, when he hears that, he goes, yeah. I ain't buying the condo.
I got till September.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, we've all learned that lesson. So, but I kind of forgot that lesson. So I go, oh, this is cool. So what do? The network has a couple of notes for them.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, good
So
gosh.
They start to tinker with one of our characters on the show, and they made him, instead of being the fall guy, they made him the straight guy, and it was like, that doesn't work all of a sudden. And he hated it.
Yeah.
So that's not good that he hates it.
Sure.
So now he doesn't like coming to work.
So they messed the chemistry up a little bit of what was
going on. And then they made us – now we're supposed to be – we're kind of like the CIA fighting terrorism, but we're so bad at it. But somehow, in spite of ourselves, we're getting the job done.
Right.
Which is funny.
Right.
Yeah,
it's great. A new Get Smart for the era.
Get Smart meets, you know, 24. Now, all of a sudden, season two, they want us to be more competent. This network wants us to be more competent. So now, that we're more a little bit more competent. And they take us, they move us our night, and they our lead-in now is Battle of the Blades, which is figure skater meets hockey player.
Romantic comedy?
So now you've got it's a different.
Is it a was it a reality show?
No longer have the most intellectual people.
Was it a reality show?
It's like Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah,
on
but
ice.
It's a reality show.
Let's
vote for this guy.
He thought it was like
that.
Blades.
I wasn't a scripted show.
He was hoping it was Blades of Glory.
Or some sort of John Cusack movie. I don't know.
It's a reality, like, you know, vote you into the next round thing.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
With the hockey player.
So they really just.
And so we're just like, you know, kind of like high common denominator, low common denominator.
You have this great successful thing, and you're like, ah, that's so great and successful. Let's change it.
Yeah. And so season two, these people are like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't get this. And we went from like a hit show to like the bottom of the barrel.
That's so frustrating.
And the network doesn't figure this out. So they go, oh, let's just cut the cord.
That's frustrating.
Like, we were massive hit.
I thought Canadians
they were
are
like,
to
I'm
be
like,
smart.
What's like a hit in Canada? They tell me this number of audience.
Yeah.
And we are 150% of that.
Yeah.
Dang.
Season two, we're only 50% of their hit number.
Yeah.
And so they don't figure out the difference between, well, it can't possibly be their notes, their fault, because they give us, they gave the producers all these notes.
Yeah.
And
well, that's why now we have Netflix and we have Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
Because all those types of guys who are writing smart shows, they don't want or need interference a lot of times.
They have a lot less interference.
You know, a lot less interference. They're like, let us do our 10 shows, and then we're going to see what happens.
Yeah. A lot less money, though.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah.
For the actors, too.
Yeah. Well, for the actors.
Maybe not
for the writers.
Maybe not for the creators.
Not the creators.
So after season two, I promised my producers of Insecurity that I would go out to Toronto and do a lot of promo for them because, of course, we didn't know we were going to get canceled.
Sure, yeah.
And so I go out to Toronto, and I have a couple auditions. I book a HBO show. I book Nikita.
Oh, yeah.
Badass martial arts guy in Nikita.
That was a CW show, right?
Yeah. Really
and
cool.
And that was in Toronto?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm working with Maggie Q. And
was
I'm
Devin,
kicking ass.
Devin Sawa?
Yeah, Devin Sawa.
Yeah.
And we're actually kind of the same, one of the same guys, like one of these, you know, badass guys that travels the world protecting these secrets.
Is she Canadian? Is Maggie Q Canadian?
No, she's American.
Okay.
Devin was. He's Canadian.
Devin's Canadian.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
So, I'm up there and I'm working and I'm doing good and I cannot leave Toronto. Every time I make plans to leave, I book something else. I book another CW show, Beauty and the Beast.
Oh yeah,
recurring role
the
on
Chris
that. I'm working on this for 6 months. I'm working on Nikita for 6 months.
Yeah,
and then I finally can come home, and I book Castle.
Yeah.
I book another show.
That was before you were here.
Yeah.
Castle was before you were here.
Yeah, right before I was here. I book another show.
In Vancouver?
No, here.
Well, oh, here Castle's, in L.A.?
Yeah, here in L.A.
Okay, got
so
it.
So I'm just booking everything at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I literally can't go in a room without booking it.
That's amazing.
Which is, you know, a sweet gig.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I get a call from one of the directors from Nikita. He's like, hey, come back to, you know, Vancouver, do this Netflix Netflix show for me. And so I'm like, cool. And so I go up to – I do a recurring role on a Netflix show that's called Hemlock Grove.
Oh, yeah.
And it was interesting that this guy – because, you know, Steve, going back to our point before, how you hear a lot of this stuff in one ear. Now, you've learned well enough to know that just one in one ear, out the other, you know. Oh, you're so great. I'm going to hire you again. Right. Okay. Well, this guy says to me, you know, I barely have anything to do in this episode of Nikita. But he's like – he pulls me aside and he goes, you know, you're really good. And he goes, you know, you're doing like so much with nothing, but so subtly. It's like amazing to watch. I go, oh, man, thanks. He goes, yeah, well, I'm doing the show and I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And I'm like, okay. Sure enough, I get this call to come up to Canada and do this role on Netflix. And so I do that, but they don't know where it's going. So they don't sign anybody to a season two option. Mm. So I come back here, yeah. Audition for General Hospital.
Oh, man.
And I get the role. I'm like, well, it is, you know, 15 minutes from the house.
Yeah, no, dude, you got the easiest drive of everybody.
Yeah, I really do.
But, yeah, I could see how it's a big change, man. When you're used to being a vagabond and going, hey, I'm on this set, and I'm on this set, I'm on this set. And all of a sudden it's like, hey, you're home now.
Yeah.
Even though you kind of wanted to be home.
Yeah.
No, now you're home.
There's a difference, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, there is a difference. So. And so it, you know, there's always a grass is greener type of a situation, I think, not only for actors, but people in general.
Well, and there's not a – when you get the call that you book a job, there's something to that, right? And so you're not getting that call anymore because you have the same job.
Right.
And you're used to getting that like, oh, they want me, they want me, they want me. And I'm not sure if part of it, but like I can imagine for me –
I never did get too high. Even Rebecca would say, aren't you excited? I'm like, I don't know, it's just a job.
Well, maybe not even like, oh, I'm so great, but still like, oh, that feels good. That feels
good.
Oh,
absolutely.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like listen, when you're booking stuff like that,
of course.
Like, you had a good job.
Yeah. Of course.
And, you know, I didn't make the wrong decision 20 years ago,
Right, sure. Yeah,
Like, oh, my God. And that was, I think, some of the best advice from this guy, Jeremy Whalen, that I did acting classes with. He was like, look, I made a big mistake back in my time by, like, not doing TV, not doing commercials, because all that stuff keeps the wolf from the door. Because eventually, you know, you'll get to a place that you want to be. But unless you do this other work that pays the bills, guess what? You're going to be doing a 9-to-5 job, or you're going to be, you know, busy waiting tables at night, not being able to study your lines. You need to take those gigs that pay you money to get to the next gig.
Yeah.
And work always begets work.
Absolutely.
How many times have I, you know, like I went with a girl that was on Walking Dead. She wanted to go shopping for a car. And he's like, hey, aren't you on The Walking Dead? And she goes, oh, yeah, I am. And he goes, you know, I used to be an actor. He goes, I made the mistake of telling my agent, I used to do all this TV, and I told my agent I didn't want to do any more TV, no more film. And I kind of looking at him going, how'd that work out for you?
Right.
I'm selling cars.
Yeah. No, it's we need to learn from the people before us.
Yeah.
You know, and it's rare that we can actually like, what was his name? Your first actor?
Jeremy Whalen.
Jeremy. It's like, it's rare that, you know, it's not rare that he would say that to people, but it's rare for the people who actually would take that
advice
to heart. Right.
Can we talk about that? Like people just don't want to listen in this business. You know, they just don't, they get so much gold advice. Everybody wants to be a celebrity, but they don't want to put it in the work. So they don't listen.
Yeah. There's not
a lot. Listen, you want to be an actor? Go get into the best acting class, scene study class you can possibly.
Sure.
But I just did a cold reading class. I'm like, what? Cold reading?
Who does cold reading anymore?
But people are lazy, so that's the class they take.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Nobody does cold reading, but they're lazy.
Yeah, I've never understood the value of a cold reading class because no one.
Yeah, I
no
thought
one,
cold.
No one,
I
no
mean,
one, no one walks. You're walking 20, into a casting
25
office.
Years ago, it was that way.
Yeah, but no.
Yeah, when they didn't have fax machines.
Yeah, you'd be like, hey, here's your scene. Go look at it for 10 minutes. You're coming in. Where you get it.
I mean,
get
I think
an
that
advantage.
Happened for the 6 months of my career, and then we had fax machines.
But then, there's that no hasn't been relevant for.
I know.
I've never. That happened
it's
to me
less...
when I was in New York doing theater auditions. You'd go in and sing first, and then if they liked your singing, they'd hand you the script. You'd go outside, you'd get paired up with your scene partner, learn it, and bring it back in. So, yeah, in that respect, cold. But that was
it's less relevant
15
now than it's
years
ever
ago.
Been.
If you go into an audition, and the and generally it'll be the director that'll do this, or sometimes the casting director, but generally the director. Well, you were really good, man. I don't know if you're right for this role, but why don't you take these sides?
Sure.
Go out there, come back.
Yep.
I personally love that because I know that most actors will shit a brick.
Yes.
And I'm like,
that's how I
all
got,
right.
That's how I got a big movie.
I saw you in a military movie one time.
Yeah, The
Was
Last Castle.
It? Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that it?
Yeah, because I auditioned, and, you know, it was probably 10 pages at the time, and the guy was like, oh, that was great, that was great. Great, great audition. Great, Rod Lurie, great guy. Great audition. And I'm driving home, and he's like, they're like, I literally get off. It was an hour out to Calabasas.
And you got the page on your pager?
No, no pager. I had the cell phone. And they said, hey, Rod wants to give you a bigger part. So you need to go back and audition for that part. I said, okay. So I went back, and they literally handed me a packet.
Did other were other guys in that same situation?
No. But he handed me a packet of 20 pages, like, hey, just take your time.
But the fact that you didn't shit a brick helped.
Yeah, and I and we're used to memorizing pretty quickly and getting... Yeah.
Were you doing soaps at that time?
I had left.
You left here?
I left here, and that's...
I'll be damned. I thought it was pre-GH.
No, that was right. That was my time that I left in 1998. Huh. I left, and I got... two-hour movie.
Can you believe that's 20 years ago?
No, dude. And then Last Castle. And then I did a sci-fi thing up in Vancouver for 4 months, a miniseries.
Do you remember what the name of that was?
Taken.
Oh, Taken.
Yeah, I did Taken.
Sure.
Yeah,
it was that was good. Good
20-hour miniseries.
Taken was 20 years ago?
No, it was 20 years ago, yeah. And it was crazy because it was 10, and it was kind of ahead of its time because it was 10 two-hour movies that Spielberg was in charge of, EP'd but it was on Sci-Fi Channel.
Yeah,
right.
It was on this little channel that nobody really knew about, and they spent money to have Spielberg come in, and this thing was amazing.
Yeah.
Hired huge directors. Tobe Hooper, who wrote and directed Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh, wow.
Amazing guy. He did the first episode.
Yeah.
Loved him. And but it brought a lot of cachet to Sci-Fi.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and it won a lot of Emmys.
Did you ever think about your sliding door in life? You know, if I would have taken this door or the other door?
Yes.
Because I'm sure you never in a million years would have thought you would have been on General Hospital for 45 years.
No, and it's a trip, man, because I look back and it was such a blessing to be able to go do those jobs. And then I did Taken kind of put me over the edge.
Because
I was gone for almost a year straight.
Oh, I see. The distance thing.
I just well,
are
just,
you married at this
yeah,
point?
Yeah, I was got married. Okay. And she went with me. Sheree went with me to Nashville. And then I was supposed to come home for a month and do Taken. And originally Taken was supposed to be filmed in San Diego. So I'm like, okay, that's easy enough. I'll just drive down and I could pop back up on weekends, three-day weekends. And then it turns out it was going to be filmed in Vancouver for money reasons. And then I saw the rundown because I was in the first three episodes. So the first three, 6 hours basically. And I was every other day. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to be up here for 4 months, you know? And so we went up, it was right before I was supposed to leave the day before, or the day of 9/11. So that threw everything in the shambles, and then we end up driving up, with my wife and her cat. Don't judge me. Drove up. I told you the story.
Yeah,
I got pulled over because I was speeding in like Washington, and the guy looked in the back. He saw the hairy cat in the window, this white Persian cat. He's like, "Just go." You just lost your man card. Just go run away from me. So we get up there, and it was great. Vancouver's an awesome town, by the way.
Yeah. Awesome.
Amazing. We loved it so much. Yeah. But I was like, I don't know. I don't know if I could do this for the rest of my life.
Jumping around,
you know. And I went home, and I'm like.
Because you're thinking family at this point.
Yeah, I was married, wanted to have kids. I'm like, I just don't know if I can travel or if this is going to be great. And so we get home. And I'm like, General Hospital. Somehow we started talking to them again and we came back.
Because you're a star.
And, well, pretty big. And, so Taken airs. Mm-hmm. This is before Taken airs. Mm. Taken airs. It wins Emmys.
Yeah.
Wins all this stuff, all these accolades. And sure enough, I already resigned here.
Somebody calls you
every week for 6 months.
Oh, brother.
For primetime shows.
And are you just like a little bit
like straight off?
Okay, if you
straight, yeah.
I know it's very difficult to talk about regrets, and especially since you have a great job here and you have a great life. And
I wonder. Yeah, I still wonder. Of course, you'd have to be, you'd have to be lying not to say, "Hey, I wonder what would have happened."
I think, listen, you've done very well for yourself, but I think you could have been a big, big star.
Oh, thank you.
I still think you're a big star.
but I appreciate that.
In a different venue, of course.
But that'd be great. And look, I got to do some great stuff and worked with some great people. But yeah, when I came back, I'm like, oh man, I love my job here. I love it. But I do wonder, sure. I mean, you have to be honest with yourself and say, hey, maybe I could have gotten a series that was, you know, 5-6 years and led to some movies, or, you know, it was a different time. And I don't want to say I regret it, but I for sure wonder about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah.
And it's afforded me a great life.
It's a slippery slope to
it is.
And to have constant regret.
Yeah,
but
you don't
there's
want
a
to
moment
live in the
of
past.
Allowance where you're of like, course. Let me just dissect
yeah,
this.
Man, it could have been different. Or, you know, but you just never know, because I don't want to take for granted the situation that I have here or had and have. And then my family and my kids and.
You would have never met me, dude.
And I never would have met Bradford. And we wouldn't be doing a dog and pony show
I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. Hey, you know, I don't think anybody has to edit the show, by the way, because you guys are riveting, by the way. And so am I. So I don't think you guys need to edit this at all. I think this should be a 2-hour show. But let me put you on the spot, Steve.
Yeah. You put me on the spot.
You've got more businesses or had or did or over the years than I care to count. I have 5 dogs, a girlfriend, a house, and 1 job. I mean, I've got some rental property, whatever. But
yeah,
you guess I can't imagine doing what you're doing and, you know, keeping it together. Do you regret, because you took off from General Hospital for a while and you had all these businesses that you were juggling, which gives you zero time at all to do anything except, you know, try to make these businesses go. Mm-hmm. Do you regret not having your hands free to dip into seriously film and TV auditioning while you're free to do so, because you've got all these responsibilities.
Yeah, I think that's a good question, really. And I think
as an actor, I think you need to, you know, you can't have all these things going on too much.
Right. Isn't that the double-edged sword, though? Because as an actor, you don't want to necessarily my biggest thing, I guess I've always been kind of an entrepreneur, but my biggest driver was I don't want to wait around for someone to say, hey, we like you. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to be financially free enough to not have to worry about if I was going to get another job. So that was more my driver than not wanting to dive into TV and film, because I sure love it and I love to work. But I didn't want that to kind of define whether I was going to work again or not, or be able to pay my bills again or not. Mm-hmm. That's really what it came down to for me. And I guess I got caught up in being that entrepreneurial, that I just kept doing different businesses and kept jumping around. And so I don't know. It could have been.
I think it can be. You're good. Your problem is that you're good at spotting opportunities.
Sure.
I think your other problem is that you don't know well enough to know to leave it alone.
Sometimes. Yeah.
Well, you had a very specific goal at that point.
I did. That was my goal.
You were moving to a different part of the country.
Yeah.
And you wanted to make yourself self-sufficient.
Correct.
So you didn't have to worry about it, and you could live the life you wanted.
All depends what you want out of life. But
right.
But if you want to be an actor.
Yeah, no, you got to be here. Yeah. And you got to focus on it.
You got to focus.
You got to focus on it as much as we did when we were younger. You have to focus on it as much as anything else.
Yeah.
I mean, it takes that. You should focus on it 24 hours a day.
I don't know. Like, I'm not one of these guys that, like, you know, wants to direct, produce.
Yeah.
None of that. Like, because I'm like, no, I'm an actor. Yeah. I have no interest in doing any of that.
Yeah. Do you still take class?
When I can, I still study with Larry Moss.
Yeah. On his weekends and whatever he
does. Yeah, those 4-day intensives.
Yeah.
That's
it's
cool.
pretty incredible. Like, one day cool. I really need to draw. I would love to do a scene with Steve and Larry Moss's class and just go, hey, listen, I've got my scene partner. This is our age. This is what we look like. And he'll pick a scene for us.
I'd love to do that, dude.
I
would love to do it.
It's terrifying.
I love it. Listen, I mean, that's not why we're doing this stuff, but we talk about this all the time, is how do you keep the creative going, right? Mm-hmm. You can it's not always the most creative thing to do a soap opera, mm-hmm. right? Because there's a lot of filler.
Yeah.
Right? So you don't have the, like, oh, this is the big scene. This is the big scene. Sometimes those come up during the week. Oh, this is good. That moment you catch that maybe you weren't accounting on catching, mm. or maybe the scene was like, mm. okay, this is the finale of this run. Let's, you know, we got something here, you know, but we don't get that so often.
Right.
You know, and to be able to go do something that is terrifying, dude, I love it. I got nothing to lose now. We're at the age where who cares? Let's go for it. Yeah, I mean, we're doing comedy shows now.
Yeah.
And it's terrifying.
Yeah.
Because I'm not a comedian, and you're getting up in front of 400 people that obviously is an audience who wants to see you. It's a forgiving audience, but you're still having to do a half hour in front of 400 mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. That keeps going.
It's amazing. And I'm always impressed at how many people you guys draw in. Like that,
it's terrifying, but it's fun.
So much fun.
So to answer that, I would love to do something like that.
I'll tell you right
like
now that,
you know?
I generally get the email in September, and it's generally right before Christmas, which is when we're like literally exhausted.
Sure.
But if I know that I can count on you, I might just pull my pants up and my socks up and go, all right, let's, you know, buckle down and suck it up.
What's
and
the
do
wait
this.
List for those kind of things? Because I know if you're not in the,
it could be a lifetime if you don't. You know, I had my friend Laurie Holden, who was on Walking Dead, drag me into his class and say, Larry, Will DeVry, Larry Moss.
Yeah.
Will, nice to meet, because he's such a nice guy.
Yeah.
He's not like, oh, you know, go wait in line. He's just like, well, you know.
Yeah. He loves actors.
He loves actors.
Yeah, well, I had my friend Alex, she would do weekends with Larry. And
I've heard his name for 20 years, so I've heard nothing but great things about the guy.
Wait till you meet him and work with him, man.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So I've always had an interest in doing the weekends. I've just never found a way to do it, and I'm not tuned into it either. But if there's any, like, I'm
are you trying to say you'd like to get into his class, Bradford? Is that what you're trying
absolutely
to say?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Bradford is actually looking for a class now.
If you're looking for a class here,
okay.
Now Larry has a lot of disciples, but off air I will give you the one disciple that, you know, he talks about a lot that he trusts, and I do too.
Yeah.
We'll talk about it because it gives you the same kind of, she gives you the same kind of material.
Great.
And
it's
good stuff.
Awesome.
But I'm going to tell you a quick story about Larry.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I know you're looking at the clock, but this is how intuitive he is. He meets a lot of new people all the time. So he has this guy, Alex from Vancouver, big dude, right? Like big guy. Alex, of course, books a lot of FBI roles and cop roles.
Sure. Yeah.
Just basically.
Right.
So, but works all his list, you know, list is this long, but it's all co-starring roles of, you know, like you said, the cop guy,
right?
Cop number two. And, so he comes into this class and he does this scene of classic material, and Larry's looking at him and he goes, what's your name again? And he goes, Alex Ponovich. Alex, you're really good. He goes, Alex, are you, you in a band? Alex goes, Yeah. As a matter of fact, I am in a band. He goes, yeah, I thought so. Let me guess, you play bass. He goes, well, yeah, I play bass, yeah. He goes, yeah. Yeah, you seem like a guy that just, you know, wants to have some fun. So you stand in the background and you strum on your bass and you have a little fun. You know, you're part of the party in the background having some fun. He goes, Alex, why are you playing the bass when you have an orchestra at your disposal?
Wow.
It changed his life immediately.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, I got goosebumps. That's great.
So we have to do a scene. We'll do a scene, and I'll get us a scene, and yes.
We'll talk.
Yeah.
Hey, man.
So,
this
dude,
was awesome.
We could talk. Honestly, that went by so fast.
Well, so you talking about us going through the cast multiple times? What happens is,
was I the most interesting?
You are the most interesting.
What
man
happens
in the
is,
world, Will.
What happens is sometimes we talk and we just keep talking and it turns into two parts. That doesn't mean we came back around. It means that we could do two parts with Will.
But.
And so we will do a part two. It just won't go back to back because we're going to reconvene.
Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thanks,
thank you
dude.
For having
me,
gentlemen.
Hey, man, we appreciate you coming, honestly. Oh, and awesome. And being so honest.
Yeah.
It's refreshing to be able to have, like an honest conversation. And you and I, Will, have always been honest with each other.
Yeah.
Just in life, which is amazing, because any time you can just be completely honest with somebody, you just build a great relationship. And I appreciate you being honest, dude. So thank you so much for even sitting down with us.
Thanks, man.
Every car comes with its share of stories. That ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up a first date, the luxury package you got after a big promotion, or just the mileage you saved by riding your bike all summer. While you can't put a price tag on your stories, now with TrueCar, you can at least find out what your car's worth when it's time to sell it or trade it in.
Just go to TrueCar. Simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Then answer a few questions. Navigation and moonroof? Watch as they bump up your value. High mileage? You already knew it was going to cost you, but now you know how much it dings your wallet so you can plan ahead. And once you're finished, you'll get a true cash offer sent in minutes, which you can take to a local certified dealer to cash out or trade in. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today. True cash offer not available in all areas.
If you like our show, you're going to love Say It Forward with Rebecca Rothstein on Podcast One.
Join the financial guru of the stars as she sits down for candid conversations with celebrities and inspiring stories from the people who live them.
Download new episodes of Say It Forward every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.